Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
To convince a child to keep walking, try switching roles with them. Let the child play the role of the parent. They'll immediately do what you want them to do.
You are raising in your home people that the Bible is very clear about their status. They need to be converted, not just a conformity of their behavior. They need a transforming encounter with the gospel of Jesus Christ. That is the ultimate priority.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Is your church prepared to be terrorized? Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say terrorized? I meant protested. This is Wretched Radio. Apparently, words can mean whatever you want them to mean. What I saw on Summit Avenue in St. Paul, Minnesota at City's Church, the place where I was sprinkled with water as an infant, by the way, was absolute criminal activity, breaking federal, breaking state laws, and yet we're being told by talking heads, by spokespeople, and by the woman who led the invasion, that this was a legal protest. In fact, Don Lemon said, hey, to the pastor, he said, don't we have the right to assemble and protest? Yeah, you do, but not inside of a privately owned property. And yet they persist in calling it a protest. I'm sorry. That was criminal behavior. And for as long as our culture entertains what happened there as just a protest and doesn't outright condemn it, and if the government officials whose job it is to protect us, this is finally Romans 13, man, this is a clear application of that. No debate amongst Christians. The government needs to protect us. That is their God-ordained job. That is also their constitutional duty. And until they start really exercising their authority, you and I better be talking about preparing for more protests. Protests. They break into the building. They're yelling at people. They're insulting people. And they call that a peaceful protest. Just a conversation. So apparently, I guess really, you know what? Maybe on second thought, we should go with this. Let's go with this just being a peaceful protest protected by the Constitution. Because that would mean then that we can actually go into abortion clinics, make a ruckus, yell at people, shame the doctors, and simply call it a protest. I think that would work. Better yet. For Don Lemon, we can just break into his home, start yelling at him and anybody else that he has there, and we'll just call it a protest. See how that works? I mean, this is so preposterous and so bizarre to me. I'm serious. I'm just waiting for somebody to say, no, and it wasn't a protest either. It was a picnic. You see, Don Lemon had some breath mints in his pocket. That is technically food. So we simply entered the church to have a picnic. All righty then. The knuckleheadery is going to continue. And we're going to have to witness it and cringe and be extremely frustrated by such... It's so juvenile. It's so silly. It's like listening to children defend their behavior that was a violation of a house policy when mom and dad cracks down on them. That's gonna go on. But in the meantime, the question is your church ready? Because there is a reasonable chance that it will happen to your church. You say, how reasonable? This was an article, interestingly enough, a good article by Joe Carter. It was actually titled, What Should Christians Do When Protest Enters the Sanctuary? Joe, that wasn't a protest. He gives the statistics of how often this stuff is happening. Here it is. According to Family Research Council, 383 churches endured a combined total of 415 hostile incidents in 2024. Hostile. No, we were there actually to encourage people. It wasn't aggressive. When we were yelling at them, we were simply trying to help them. Here's the statistics. It included vandalism, arson, armed aggression, and service disruptions. Armed incidents more than doubled from 12 in 2023 to 28 in 2024. To date, 1,384 acts of hostility toward U.S. churches occurred between January 2018 and December 2024. In other words, it's already going on a lot. And until our government says, not a chance, you'll be arrested, you'll have federal charges filed against you, you're going to be fined. Until that happens, we need to talk about what it is we should do as a local church to protect the people who come to worship King Jesus. Received an email. I can't tell you the name of this wretched person, because if I did, the progressives might hear about it, go to his house, break into, protest. to break bread. That's what they're going to. They broke in during dinner time. We were just going to break bread. That's all we were doing. He was actually at City's church on Sunday morning. He offered some details I have not heard elsewhere. Here's what he wrote. Christians have enemies, and those enemies are well-funded, well-organized, and coordinated between different branches of their movement. Here's the deets. The church invaders came in three waves. First, the actual disruptors who barged in yelling and chanting, followed by the independent so-called journalists with cameras to make sure they caught anything on video that might be useful. And then a team of professional so-called journalists who came in last. You mean they weren't just driving down Summit Avenue in St. Paul and they saw a church and went, I wonder if we should just see what's happening inside of there. Oh, look, there's some other people who who luckily, that's what they'd say, luckily determined that that church might be of interest to them. Not a chance. They got together and they determined who's going to go in first, who's second wave, who's third wave. Back to our inside source from City's church. All of them were coordinated with each other in the attack. But the journalists all denied being in on the planning of the attack. I spoke with the camera operator with the professional team who claimed, insanely, that his crew were not disrupting our service, but were just there to show the world what was going on in our church. What a lucky break, something that actually went on. Oh, how lucky was that journalist? Really, really lucky. As if they had just happened and decided to see what was going on, writes our inside source. Not to mention the insinuation that we at City's Church were the ones who had something to be ashamed of, or something of which to be ashamed, as I suspect you prefer. You're exactly right. That is exactly what I prefer. Not ending a sentence with a preposition. This was a coordinated attack. This was an effort to make a scene so that they could videotape it, so that they could incite more terroristic attacks. This was a coordinated effort. And until somebody, it won't be somebody in Minnesota, we're looking to you, Don, to come down and crack down on this. The Department of Justice, my understanding is Pam Bondi, she actually called the pastor of the church who had his hands full, needless to say. Well, until our government steps in between us, we need to start talking about a plan. And that's the second part of this inside letter I received. Second, churches would be wise to make a plan for what to do when a church invasion occurs. Who would have thought to plan for something like this? The city church elders probably didn't have a meeting to say, hey, just in case Don Lemon shows up yelling and screaming and being utterly juvenile in his comments and representation of the Constitution and Christianity, what should we do? They probably didn't do that, but you should. Your church needs to talk about this. Your elders should get together, deacons, to discuss if this happens in your church, what is the response going to be? Back to the letter. I will say, it's not a good feeling to be taken totally by surprise without any idea about what we should do. There have been many people online who have criticized the lack of forceful vigor on the part of the men of City's Church. I've seen quite a few people claiming that their invaders would be repelled immediately with overwhelming violence. To that, I would suggest that the invaders of our church were intentionally trying to provoke us to violence in hopes of documenting some event that would justify an even greater reaction. I think that's pretty reasonable assessment of the situation. What does your church do? Does your church, I'm not tipping the scale here. I'm just saying, do you arm up? Do you draw the holsters when a disruption takes place? Or does it look more like we saw at the city's church where there was nobody yelling back? There was nobody engaging in tomfoolery. Instead, they simply were gracious. The pastor simply said, you gotta go, which, by the way, is their legal right to do so. Question. Is your church ready? Not for a picnic, not for a protest, but for a terroristic invasion. Next on Wretched Radio.
Let's be honest. You've earned your PhD in couch sitting. You know exactly which cushion has the perfect amount of give. You memorize where the remote lands when you toss it. You are a professional. Well, congratulations. Your expertise just became holy ground. Fortis Plus has officially arrived on your TV. That's right. Your sanctuary of relaxation is now an actual sanctuary. Stream biblical truth without moving a muscle, except maybe your thumb on the remote. Every single resource Fortis Plus produces is now available on that beautiful big screen you justified buying because, well, it was on sale, honey. From your phone to now on your Roku, Samsung, LG, Vizio, Apple TV. Basically, if it has a screen and an internet connection, Fortis Plus is there. It's free to download the app. It's free to stream all of our content, funded by gospel partners who believe your couch time should count for eternity. Go ahead, stay seated, but download Fortis Plus first, because your couch just got promoted.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke? Or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California. Beautiful campus. All of the athletics and activities that you've come to expect from universities. But it's more than that. The academic programs are most excellent, preparing students for the future. The Washington Post just said, number 6 for preparing students for the real world. All that. Plus, the Masters University isn't woke, and it is thoroughly biblical. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
You know what I love about coffee? It's not just the first sip in the morning, though it's pretty great. It's that you can count on it. Every morning, it's there, ready to wake you up and get your day started. And that's exactly what we've built with the Fortis Plus app. It's your daily dose of biblical truth, ready when you are, completely free. Think about it. Every day, the culture is throwing lies at you faster than you can dodge them. Your kids are getting discipled by TikTok, your marriage is under attack, and the world is telling you that up is down and wrong is right. But what if every day you had access to voices that would remind you what's actually true? Dr. John Krotz, Pastor Brad Bickney, Dr. Adam Tyson, Jason Lyle, Dr. Andrew Walker, Libby Gloss, Dr. Greg Gifford, and others, all on Fortis Plus, where you're going to find hundreds of hours of content and new stuff being added daily. Absolutely free. Look, you're already reaching for your phone first thing in the morning anyway. Why not make it count? Download Fortis Plus right now and start your day with truth instead of trash. It's free, it's biblical, and it's exactly what you need to stand strong in this brave new world. Fortis Plus at fortisplus.org.
Know your church fathers. Clement of Alexandria was an apologist in the late 2nd century. He ran a school in Alexandria, Egypt, where he instructed new converts and trained Christian apologists. He taught that only Christianity, with its revelation from God in the Bible, has the answers regarding creation, good and evil, and salvation.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
You do not need to live in the state. Hold on!
Oh, thank you, man.
Breaking news! Breaking news! This is Wretched Radio. We have an inside source. Back to the letter that we received from a wretched person who described what happened at City's Church on Sunday. One invader was walking up and down the aisles of seats, recording himself, insulting and deriding the churchgoers, mocking our pastor and our faith. I, writes this individual, think it was wise for the men of City's Church to have self-restraint. I'm not saying that physical force should never be used, but in this case, it was best that the violence was not escalated. That is the take of an individual who had to live through this picnic. Sorry. Protest. I'm sorry. Invasion of their church on Sunday morning. Has your church had a conversation about what you would do if this happens to you? And I'm afraid it could. In fact, was just I could probably find it on my cell phone, was sent a picture. This is in northern Forsyth. In northern Georgia. We're talking about you're in a place where you can see the mountains and you can hear the banjos playing, okay? And there was a car that had a handmade sign, and it had the words ICE all over it. And it had ICE all crossed out. And then it had this written: "We the people are stronger than the people in power." Then it had this sign, the big handwritten sign: "Liberty and justice for all." That's in Georgia. You don't expect that type of advertising. In other words, this could happen anywhere. Are you ready? Back to the article from Joe Carter, walking through what your church could do. Please note, I'm not suggesting what your church should do. Our church is going to have a conversation about it. We already are. What we do on Sunday if this happens to us. This was a helpful article. I don't think Joe was trying to be definitive either. This is intended to help us think through it, knowing the legality first. Is church a public space where anyone may protest? The answer to that is no. It's private property. Supreme Court rulings have upheld. You can't just barge in to a place that is owned by somebody. Now, you can have this argument about a public property, a library, a government building, private property. Your protest rights stop at the door. You can do it out on the side, on the public sidewalk, not on the private property sidewalk, but on the public sidewalk. You need to know as a church, you have legal rights. When does protest become unlawful inside of a church? Well, I don't think a protest belongs inside of a church ever. So that quibble with word selection aside, protest typically becomes unlawful when it involves disruption, refusal to comply with lawful instructions, or interference with religious worship. That's exactly what happened Sunday morning at City's Church. He continues, examples of commonly recognized in law include interrupting a worship service, shouting or chanting during prayer or preaching, blocking aisles or access points, refusing to leave when asked by church leadership, and attempting to seize microphones or approach the platform. I don't know that they attempted to seize any microphones, but they did disrupt. They were marching in the aisles. They were yelling. They were shouting. They were terrorizing children. They were scared of these people. At that point, the aforementioned descriptors, the issue is no longer political disagreement, but becomes a legal issue. In other words, trespassing or disorderly conduct. There's a better word choice than protest. What federal laws protect churches from disruption? Think FACE, F-A-C-E, It's the FACE Act. You should just remember FACE. You have the legal right to assemble without disruption. Churches and aggrieved individuals can also bring civil suits seeking injunctive relief, compensatory and punitive damages, and attorney's fees. If you were City's Church, would you pursue those? I just read the statement that they posted from City's Church stating, "Hey, government, do your job." Furthermore, they are consulting with attorneys to determine the legal course of action. I think they have decisions, big decisions to make. I would never, from this vantage point, drop in and say, "This is what you should do." City's Church is a very good church. Even a bad church, I think, out of bounds to tell the elders what to be doing in a particular situation. What would you do if you were an elder and you had to work through this? Are we going to sue them? Are we going to hire a publicity agent to get us on Fox News and on, well, they probably wouldn't put him on MSNBC. The point is, they could do a lot to potentially bring attention to this, to hopefully get our government to do what they are assigned to do by God. What would you do if you were an elder? Be praying for those elders up at City Church. Is asking someone to leave a church a violation of religious freedom? Here's the long, complicated answer. No, it's not. You're not violating their religious freedom. You're exercising yours, which makes this bonkers. Should pastors personally confront protesters during the service? Now, again, this is from Joe Carter's article, and he also took some of this from Brotherhood Mutual Insurance, who protects churches with insurance and gives them some helps as to how to deal with situations like this. Should a pastor confront protesters? Joe says generally no. And he writes this: pastors are shepherds, not security officers. I would say actually a shepherd is a security officer for the sheep. He has a staff. He does defend the sheep from being devoured by wolves, both the actual and the metaphorical. So I'm not so sure. But the question I think that is at the base of this is, should security, the pastor, any of them, get tough, get intimidating back, try to be more forceful, try to be aggressive with them? As I stand here at the moment, I tip toward, I don't think so. Now, what if these individuals who have broken in to the church for the sake of disruption start to like bump people, push them? Then the men get involved. We defend people, especially women and children. If they get violent, if they are waving firearms, that's when the security team absolutely kicks it in. So I agree with the anonymous individual who wrote to us about what happened at City's Church. There might be a time for that, but I think until they start to be physically aggressive, we've got to be a witness here. We've got to be a testimony. We don't have to be complete pushovers. We see that Paul ran. We see that Jesus warned, it's going to be dangerous out there, take a sword. So those things aren't off the table. It seems that maybe they should be considered this is our last resort, as opposed to, bow up, boys, and as soon as they step in that door, we're going to teach them a lesson or two. I remember seeing this, by the way, when a couple of pastors, no longer qualified to be pastors, when they came to the, it was Truth, was it the Truth, Shepherd, Strange Fire, whatever it was, it was James McDonald and Mark Dever. Mark, what's the name of the tough guy in Arizona? At any rate, they kind of came to make a ruckus. I saw the security treat them so graciously, and it just de-escalated everything. Back to the article. Confrontation during worship can escalate rather than resolve the situation. According to Brotherhood Mutual Insurance and other church safety experts, best practice is for the pastor to continue the service if possible while trained volunteers or designated leaders handle the situation, with law enforcement contacted if the disruption persists. This approach protects the congregation and prevents the pulpit from becoming a stage for conflict. Now think of John Calvin, when those who broke in, these dissenters who were wanting to live less than godly lives, wanted to take communion. What did skinny John Calvin do? He fell on the table to protect the elements. Kill me first. What will your church do? I think calling the police immediately is wise. Immediately let them sort it. And then remember this, as this is going down and you're implementing your plan and there can be lots of scary stuff going on, we need to remember that our master promised this is going to happen. It's not a maybe, it's a when. You will be persecuted. And what did our good shepherd say about those of us who are persecuted? You're blessed. Blessed. This is Wretched Radio.
And it's now time for your daily Fortis News Break, a production of Fortis Institute. Well, we started Florida, where a woman posted a Facebook comment critical of her mayor's support for Israel. And then she got an unexpected house call from police sent by the mayor's office to investigate her, quote, concerning speech. Raquel Pacheco, who's a veteran and repeat political candidate in Miami Beach, called Mayor Stephen Miner the guy who consistently calls for the death of all Palestinians after he touted the city as welcoming. Two officers showed up in an unmarked car to verify her Facebook account and warned her to refrain from posting things like that because it might incite someone to do something radical. Speaking of people uncomfortable with free speech, Joy Behar complained this week that protesting and voting aren't enough anymore when it comes to President Trump. Americans need to, quote, step up and do something about this guy. Though she was notably vague on what that something might be beyond calling Congress. In Nigeria, the Kaduna State government initially denied that 177 Christians were kidnapped from three churches during a recent worship service. They denied it, that is, until survivors, church officials, and community leaders confirmed that Fulani terrorists, armed with AK-47s, stormed two churches and a Sunday school, marching worshipers into the wilderness. 11 victims escaped, leaving 166 still in captivity. Up in Canada, the Deputy Secretary of U.S. Health and Human Services expressed shock at what he called a strange new horror, referring to Canada's euthanasia program and what it's become, an organ harvesting operation. Canada leads the world in organ donation after euthanasia, with 136 of the 286 reported cases worldwide. President Trump didn't mince words recently following Supreme Court's oral arguments on transgender athletes in women's sports, saying justices sympathetic to allowing biological males competing against women should, quote, lose a lot of credibility. And you know what? He's right. The issue isn't complicated. Sports were created with biological distinctions. Germany, continuing its war on its own citizens' comfort, has forced Toyota and Lexus to remotely disable parking heaters in hundreds of thousands of vehicles. Owners woke up to find their car heaters shut off by the government because officials deemed it unnecessary running of the engine. Finally, some genuinely good news as we wrap up. After nearly a decade of legal warfare, New York has abandoned its crusade to force Christian churches to fund abortions through employee health plans. The Supreme Court's repeated interventions, including rulings last year, finally convinced the radically pro-abortion state to settle. And it took far too long for that to actually happen, but it is a significant victory for religious freedom. And that wraps up today's Fortis News Break. I'm Jimmy Hicks. If you want more, you can download Fortis Plus or sign up to become a Fortis Insider for exclusive daily content. Both of those things you can do at FortisInstitute.org, and you can also subscribe to Fortis News on your favorite podcast app. That way you can get these updates daily. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.
Important dates in Christian history. 1870. Pope Pius IX proclaims the doctrine of papal infallibility. Though the authority of the Pope had been established for centuries, the teaching that the Pope's teaching is divinely inspired and infallible is a very recent invention. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
But enough about the elders, deacons, and security team. What about you? This is Wretched Radio. What should you do if protesters. Hold on. I'm busting a gun. Protest. The terrorists. What are you going to do if you're sitting in church, maybe with your family, and all of a sudden somebody breaks through the door? Zoink, Scoob, this is seemingly becoming a reality for which we should prepare. Joe Carter offers his opinion in an article. Now, we'll have it posted wherever this appears to help us walk through this. And my encouragement would be your church needs to walk through this. You need to have these conversations, and they shouldn't just be held behind closed doors. The congregation needs to be involved. Why? Well, because they're involved. What should they do? If somebody's walking down the aisle shouting stuff, should they trip the person? Should they take out their taser? Do they run screaming, hide underneath the pew? What are they need to know too. Back to the article from Joe. What should church members do when protesters arrive? First, remain calm. Avoid confrontation. Protesters often seek to provoke a reaction and may be filming the interactions. Check, check, and check. The goal should be de-escalation rather than debate. I think we all, if you're not like in the right posture, even if you're not just sitting there thinking about, okay, what if somebody comes through the door right now? Just, okay, what's the goal here? What's the initial goal? Now, please note, if these people are violent, if they're bearing weapons, that's just that's a different deal. We're talking about the scenario that we saw well-documented at City's Church, yelling, disrupting, intimidating. The goal is, let's just get it calmed down. Don't give them an opportunity to film something, and let's get them out of here. That's the initial goal, unless, of course, it escalates to a whole nother level. Second, discourage individual congregation members from approaching protesters. Instead, a designated representative, ideally someone with a calm demeanor, should approach that person or persons, and witnesses present to politely but clearly ask the protesters to leave the property. While one person engages with the situation, another should call law enforcement. Do you have that person in your congregation? You probably do. Let them do the engagement. They'll be calmer naturally. I keep thinking about that situation at Grace Community Church years ago. It was Mark Driscoll, James McDonald. They weren't going to be violent. There's no reason to even imagine such a thing. But they were there to make a scene. And I happened to be like 10 feet from it. Just providentially, there they pulled up in a limousine. And James McDonald was wearing biker shorts. It was rather bizarre. And the security, the lead security guy, I'm telling you, it's like, can I be your friend? He was the nicest guy. And that what could have turned into like a scene was de-escalated, diffused with charm and with kindness. If it's not a violent or dangerous situation, I think that that's our first line defense. Who's the person who can do that? It could be maybe it is your pastor. I don't think a pastor needs to be dismissed as one of the possibilities for the person who engages simply because it protects the pulpit. He's a protector of the sheep. Now, it's not typical that he has to protect physically, but it can happen. Who's the most calm? Get that fellow ready to engage, because you want to de-escalate it, not turn it into a fiasco. Third, document the interaction if possible, but don't allow documentation to become confrontational. According to church law and tax courts, they've upheld the right of churches to use reasonable force in removing trespassers, but this force should always be a last resort. Every situation is going to be different. I think that we need to understand there's a little grace and leeway here for different churches and different men to respond differently. And how you do that, I think you need to work that out in your congregation. But you should work it out. Here's some more helps, perhaps. Don't wait for a situation to escalate before calling the police. When they arrive, officers can issue trespass warnings, arrest for disorderly conduct, or disturbing worship, and create an official record of the incident. While leadership addresses the disruption, other church members should ensure the safety of children, elderly members, and anyone else who appears distressed. Okay, so we need more men stepping up. These people at City's Church, they were yelling, they were very aggressive. It wasn't like, hey, everybody, could we share with you our opinion on immigration and what we think about ICE and how this might be a more biblical way to do it? No, they weren't doing that. They were yelling. They were offensive. What kind of Christians are you that you're not dealing with this situation? Isn't it interesting they chose a church? Isn't that interesting? Why a church? Why didn't they go to a mosque? I think we all know the answer to that question, don't we? Many men need to be involved. If protesters have entered the building, moving vulnerable individuals to secure interior rooms may be appropriate. Children's ministry areas should have secure access protocols and clear procedures for lockdowns. And parents should know those procedures in advance. Oh, what a world, what a world, what a time we live in. It's starting to feel more like the first century church. So to all those people who went, I want to be in the first century church, man. Well, you're getting close because this is what they worshiped with a cloud hanging over them. This could be disrupted in a really nasty way at any moment. We are being mocked and ridiculed and persecuted. The entire epistle of 1 Peter is dedicated to this subject. It was so prevalent. We're starting to see that, and it appears that our churches on virtually every level need to have conversations about this. It appears it's time. According to Ministry Pacific, if your church broadcasts services online, consider implementing a delay of at least 30 seconds so you can cut the feed if disruption occurs, rather than broadcasting the incident to a wider audience, which is probably exactly what they're looking for. Now, the encouragement is for elders, deacons, security team to get together and sort this and then work through it with the congregation. The question that Joe asks and answers is, should these policies be public? And his answer is generally no. Publicizing protocols can unintentionally invite disruption. The best practice is to ensure internal clarity by having members know who to contact and what to do. He also goes on to encourage security teams to have two-way radios so that they don't have to be having these conversations out loud so that people can hear and maybe get information if they're a picnicker. And you might even want to consider having code words. It's a code yellow. It's a code red. The last question that Joe seeks to answer is, does increased security contradict trust in God? The answer is no. Trust in God has never excluded preparation or self-defense. Nehemiah prayed and posted guards. Jesus instructed the disciples to be wise as serpents, innocent as doves, and you can carry a blade. Security isn't fear, it's stewardship. Protecting your congregation is an act of love. Doing so with grace, responding to even hostile protesters with firm kindness rather than retaliation is an act of witness. Having said that, can the men of the congregation, if it's getting violent, yeah, man, we step up. We step up, all men, pastors, elders, we protect women and children, even if that means you're going down. That's our unique challenge. We are the ones who have been assigned the role of being a protector. But alas, or a lad, if you still go with gender distinctions, the email that was sent in from somebody who was sitting in City's Church on Sunday morning closes with this. Third, we must prepare our hearts. I was personally unprepared for this invasion. As a result, I was angry and depressed. We shouldn't be surprised at persecution. Jesus warned repeatedly that people would hate his followers because they hate him first. We need to remember that whatever persecution we suffer is nothing compared to the persecution our Lord endured, and that he was the only one who did not deserve persecution. Remembering that would help us to have the right perspective so that our response can be more effective in the moment. Is your heart prepared? All right, we've talked about policies and procedures, but what about our hearts? What should be the posture of the Christian heart if a group of knuckleheads kicks down your door to have a picnic on Sunday morning? This is Wretched Radio.
Thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. At Fortis Institute, we've assembled an incredible team of biblical voices who are equipping believers every day. Dr. John Kreitz, Dr. Adam Tyson, Dr. Greg Gifford, Libby Glosson, Pastor Brad Bigney, Dr. Andrew Walker, Jason Lyle, Tim Challies, and of course, our very own Todd Friel. And their work has been invaluable in equipping believers because that's our mission. And the beautiful part, when you join us and link arms with us as an ongoing monthly gospel partner, your faithful giving doesn't just sit there. It multiplies into campus evangelism and biblical counseling, marriage restoration, and gospel proclamation across the globe. And speaking of equipping people, make sure you download Fortis Plus. It is completely free if you haven't downloaded it yet, and it is loaded with hundreds of hours of content, with new content added every single day. No cost, no catch, just solid biblical truth. Look, the fields are white for harvest, and your monthly partnership make it possible. Join us as an ongoing monthly gospel partner right now by visiting fortisinstitute.org. Wretched. Amazing grace, amazing gospel. Your son asked to use your cell phone yesterday, and for just a split second, your heart stopped. And it wasn't because of what you thought he might find. You're careful about that, but because of what you knew he wouldn't find. Evidence of a man actually living for Christ. See, our kids don't care about our Sunday morning Christianity. They watch us when we think no one's looking. They notice when Dad disappears into his office and locks the door. What if your son could actually see a father who's genuinely free? A dad whose private life matches up with his public faith? That's not a fantasy, it's an actual reality, because men experience that transformation every day when they stop trying to manage their sin and let Christ kill it instead. Todd Friel's Play the Man shows you exactly how that works. There's no gimmicks, there's no quick fixes. It's just full of biblical truth about how God transforms men. Play the Man by Todd Friel. It's available right now as an audiobook, an ebook, and video series only at fortisplus.org. Hey, look, some battles, they're just too important to lose. So here's a question. Who's teaching your son what it means to be a man? Is it TikTok? His football coach? Some guy on a podcast who thinks masculinity means to never apologize? Well, here's the problem. Culture keeps handing men two options. Be a doormat or be a bulldozer. Soft or harsh, passive or angry. But scripture paints a different picture altogether. A man who's strong and gentle, leading with conviction and compassion. And that's why we created Gentle Man, a brand new video series with Todd Friel and Dr. John Kreitz. It's streaming now on Fortis Plus. It's not macho, nor is it passive, but it's biblically strong and spiritually steady. New episodes are dropping every Monday on Fortis Plus. So download the Fortis Plus app on your smartphone, on your smart TV, or just simply go to fortisplus.org. Men don't guess at manhood. They learn it from God's Word. Gentleman, exclusively on Fortis Plus.
Books of the Bible. Deuteronomy means second law. As the Israelites prepared to enter the Promised Land after wandering 40 years, God reminds them of how he rescued them from Egypt, what he commands in his law, and the blessings and curses that come with keeping or breaking his law. God is faithful to provide the inheritance he has promised to his children. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
This is not easy. This is Wretched Radio. Providentially, the sermon on Sunday morning at Alpharetta Bible Church, Friel, quit sneaking in plugs for Alpharetta Bible Church. This isn't sneaking. This is providence. We're in 1 Peter 1. It is the book of persecution, and Peter addresses the issue of suffering, of the wide array, including persecution, over and over and over again. And this Sunday, we happen to be preaching about it. If you're interested in a deeper dive into Peter's perspective on persecution, wow, that was Southern Baptist-y. You can go to alpharettabiblechurch.org. The sermons are posted there. I think they're helpful because Peter challenges us in peculiar ways to respond to persecution. He does not give security instructions. He does not give any sort of weapons training, how to store up potable water. Instead, he tells us to prepare our hearts. First Peter, it's not about doing, it's about being. What we are to be like and why we respond this way, because there's something bigger going on when persecution hits. There's something bigger. We are being persecuted so that we can respond as a holy, set apart people who are submissive and sanctified so that we can proclaim his excellencies. And so Peter gives instructions about how to be that kind of people, how to be holy, how to be submissive, how to suffer well so that the gospel can be advanced. Now, sorry, got to insert this right now. As mentioned earlier, yes, we can physically defend ourselves. This is, we've covered that ground. So please don't hit me with, you just want us to be pushovers, do you? Didn't say that ever, but that doesn't mean we can neglect what Peter commands. Our hearts need to be ready for persecution because, well, it's happening. It is happening in America. This is kind of, not as grand. I grant you that in advance. Now, this is in a sense like Pearl Harbor. This doesn't happen in America. People don't invade. People don't kick down the doors of churches to disrupt a Sunday. That doesn't. Over there, that happens, but not here. Well, it's happening here. And so Peter preempts a sinful response by telling us you need to understand what's really going on. And all he does is support the words of our Savior. By the way, if you are actually from Alpharetta Bible Church, you might want to go listen to a different program right now because we're going to talk about this a wee bit on Sunday. Blessed are you when men persecute you. Whoa, what? We're blessed when we're persecuted? That's what Jesus said. And Peter repeats it over and over and over again as he articulates, here's the blessings of persecution. Now, how's that for a statement that doesn't seem to make sense? Wait a second, there's blessings in persecution? Yeah, that's what Jesus said. Matthew 5. You are blessed if you are persecuted. Why? We need to remember the doctrine of sovereignty. We need to remember God's meta-narrative, his purpose for the planet. He is in control of every single detail. And so when we see persecution, we shouldn't think that somehow this is escaping God's purview. It's not. He ordains it for a purpose, a greater purpose, a loftier purpose. And when we adopt that mindset, we'll actually be able to have a better perspective, respond better so that people ask about the hope that lies within us and the gospel is proclaimed and moves forward and God's kingdom is expanded. Not my territory, Jabez. God's kingdom is expanded. And so Peter, throughout his entire epistle, five chapters, just keeps listing. Here's all the good stuff that can come out of persecution. You want some good stuff? You want some good things in light of the fact that it is potentially dangerous to go to church on Sunday? Do you want some blessings out of this? Because we're not going to stop assembling, by the way. Here's what Peter said. Even if you should suffer for the sake of righteousness, you're blessed. Please note, it's suffering for the sake of righteousness. You're not suffering for the sake of because you're a jerk. You're righteous. And they see that. They persecute you. If you are reviled, 4:14, for the name of Christ, you are blessed. Why? Because the Spirit of glory and God rests on you. Oh, is that what's happening when I'm being persecuted and I respond rightly? Yep. Favor with God, 1 Peter 2:19. For this finds favor, if for the sake of conscience toward God, a person bears up under sorrows When suffering unjustly, we bear up. It's not right. They shouldn't be doing this. That's not what I said or did. They're accusing me falsely. We bear up. We bear up, knowing there's something going on here. What happened in City's Church? Oh, spiritual? Are you kidding me? It was about darkness, trying to intimidate the light. And did you... It's interesting they picked that church, because I'll tell you, that pastor, how do you remember how he responded? We're about Jesus Christ. We're here to worship Jesus Christ. He's the solution. He's what the Twin Cities need. He's what America and the world needs, because he was focused on Jesus Christ and shining the spotlight on him. And they didn't like it. They desired to shut it down. And so we bear up even when it is unjust, you know, because that's how our master was treated. 5:10 in 1 Peter, after you've suffered for a little while, he will himself perfect, confirm, strengthen, and establish you. Whoa, you get all of that out of persecution? You sure can. 1 Peter 2:21, Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example for you to follow in his steps. Okay, so persecution comes. This is what I know. I've studied my master. I've seen how he responds. I know what to do. I can walk through this, and I can do it being sensible, being proactive if necessary, but understanding they hate me because they hated my master. You can have deeper fellowship to the degree that you share the sufferings of Christ. That would be your 1 Peter 4:13. These are the blessings of persecution. It's the advancement of the gospel, future glory, and reigning with Christ. What? That's connected to persecution? Yep, we'll be preaching on that this Sunday. Crowns with an eternal inheritance, all yours when we suffer well under persecution. Again, please note, I'm not talking of dismissing self-defense. I'm talking about our heart and our attitude. I'm talking about the blessings that come from persecution. Now, it's not just Peter who talks about these things. Outside of 1 Peter, James 1, you can be perfected by persecution. Count it all joy, brothers and sisters, when you encounter various trials, knowing the testing of your faith produces endurance. And let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. Oh, would you like that? Then you need to have a right heart about persecution. How's about comfort that equips one to shepherd others? So you've been persecuted. Guess what you get to do? Now you're equipped to comfort those who have been persecuted. How's about producing proven leaders and faithful stewards? That's what persecution will do. Luke 16, he who is faithful in very little is faithful also in much. He who overcomes, I will give authority over the nations. Revelation 2:26. In other words, if you show yourself to be strong and respond with the right heart under the heat of persecution, guess what? You're going to be given more authority and more responsibility because you've shown yourself reliable. Persecution reveals that. How's about it cleanses the church? Remember the parable of the four soils? Which seed withered when it sprouted up under the sunlight of persecution? Do you think that squishy people, people who are false converts, might be less inclined to go to church and participate in the life of a church if there's a threat to their life and well-being? Better believe it. In other words, persecution can purify the church, because false converts are going to go, that ain't worth it, because they don't actually believe it. You get to share in Christ's reign. If we endure, we will also reign with him. They came to life and reigned with Christ. In other words, persecution is eschatological. In other words, God is doing stuff in persecution. It's not incidental. It is instrumental. You just go ahead and tweet that one out right there. Persecution isn't like, oh, God's taken by surprise. Nope, he's ordaining all things because he's using those things for greater things, to the praise of his name, to the increase in his glory for being so amazing, for saving sinners who persecute others and for protecting those who are being persecuted. So is your church ready? Do you have the plan in place? But more personally, are you ready if your church this Sunday is invaded? And until tomorrow, go serve your King.